Programming is supported by Topline Construction Firm, your local women-owned roofing contractor based out of Shoreview, Minnesota. Roof replacement, both retail and insurance work. More information at toplineconstructionfirm.com.
I'm Carrie Miller. Now to the fallout from Brexit. A petition that's calling for a second Brexit vote is circulating in the UK as EU leaders urge Britain to begin their withdrawal from the European Union as quickly as possible. Among the unknowns, what will it mean both economically and politically? Two guests with some insight. Gillian White is with us, senior associate editor at The Atlantic, and with us from Washington. Hi, Gillian. Welcome. Good to have you here.
Hi. Thanks so much for having me.
Patrick Hicks joins us. He's associate professor and writer in residence at Augustana College in Sioux Falls. And joining us this morning from Sioux Falls. And Patrick, welcome to you. It's good to have you with us.
Thanks for having me on.
Gillian, British Prime Minister Cameron says he's going to leave office in the fall. He's speaking to Parliament this morning, which means someone else is going to lead Britain out of the EU and into this new world order. Are the political skills and the leadership skills of that person going to be pretty important in the way that Britain gets out of the EU?
Absolutely. That is going to be huge. One of the things that markets do not like is uncertainty. Political uncertainty is huge because the leader of Britain at the time that they start their exit is going to really decide how that happens. They are the person who is going to actually have to invoke Article 50, which is going to start triggering the process of leaving the union. And that has never been done before. So putting together all of the pieces that need to be put together in order for them to leave and leave successfully and keep their economy strong, hopefully, you know, that all depends on who's in charge then.
And Patrick, we see a lot of argument and consternation about who's going to be in charge. What's your take on that?
Yeah, we certainly do. And this is what's happening currently in England. So we also have a great deal of confusion in Scotland at this point in time about what's going to happen in the future. And Northern Ireland presents its own particular problem because we have the ghosts of the Troubles. And that is something that I think people need to think about. And certainly there's a number of articles right now about, well, what happens to the peace process in Northern Ireland?
So I heard something a little confusing today, Patrick and Gillian. It sounded like if Northern Ireland wanted to remain in the EU, they could. Scotland, Wales, England has to go along with this vote. Am I confused about that?
I heard that the EU would welcome Northern Ireland in and that they would welcome Scotland to remain in. But this raises a whole host of questions, in particular with Belfast, because of the unionists, of course, would like to stay with the United Kingdom. So you can't be sort of both. And this presents an enormous problem with the border of Northern Ireland, because even during the height of the Troubles, the British Army couldn't control that border. So, you know, I'm not sure what's going to happen if that is now the EU border, and it's going to be very porous. So ironically, one of the things that Brexit was hoping to solve was this issue of a porous border with immigration. And now the very border of Northern Ireland is going to be front and center in a way that it hasn't been for an entire generation.
Gillian, also hearing Nicola Sturgeon, the First Minister of Scotland, say that they might be able to block the EU withdrawal by withholding their legislative consent. How long could that really go on?
So this is part of the issue that happens with uncertainty. No one really knows. Great Britain actually has not started the process of even removing themselves from the EU yet. And now we have these calls for another vote, another referendum. So there's really no telling how long this could all take. Of course, the EU, all of those remaining members say, if you guys are going, we need you to get going as soon as possible so we can figure out what we look like without you.
What is the advantage to that, to not waiting until October to get the wheels going, Gillian?
I mean, it's just that there are truly so many things to figure out, as you just talked about. We don't even know what the UK, what Great Britain looks like at the end of this. You know, who remains, who doesn't. So I think it's one of those things where the sooner that we can start figuring things out, a lot of things need to be renegotiated. A lot of things need to be figured out. There are treaties and there are laws and there are trade agreements that will all need to be parsed. And those are going to take a long time. And I think people want as clean of a break as possible if there's going to be a break.
Patrick, one of the things that was suggested in the weeks before the election took place was that this campaign and this election was really as much about what it meant to be English as it was about immigration. Now, when you look at where the leave votes were, what conclusion do you draw about that?
Well, I heard earlier in your show talking about larger metropolitan areas having greater levels of education and certainly greater levels of integration as well in many cases. So when I look at the map of England in particular, of the Leave versus Remain, it came as no surprise to me that London wanted to remain, because London has been this incredible melting pot in England. And this has brought about some problems, of course. But ever since the collapse of the British Empire, which largely started after World War II, we saw this influx of immigration, and whole areas of London suddenly didn't look traditionally British anymore. And London has had some issues with that. But largely, the integration has been fairly strong. I mean, the current mayor of London is himself a Muslim from Pakistani origin.
Yeah.
So I see the outlying areas, the people that are hoping to get their quote-unquote country back. And that's not going to happen for a variety of global reasons and immigration reasons. But it's very much this idea of hearkening back to what once was, which in fact never actually was.
P.S. It never actually was.
Yeah.
That thing you want to go back to. Jillian, I mean, this really looks like a generational identity crisis. And maybe this referendum doesn't end a lot of the angst around that. Maybe it's a symptom of it.
Yeah, I mean, I think people are really interested in the demographic breakdown of how folks voted. Cities versus outlying areas was a very interesting portion of it. Incomes was an important portion of it. Education was an important portion of it. And age played a factor, too, with folks who were a bit older being more likely to vote to leave, and those who are a bit younger being more likely to vote to stay. And I think when you have those disparities in voting and then this happens, I don't know that necessarily brings people closer together as much
exactly.
as it shows these stark divides. And I think that's, of course, unsettling for people who are living there and thinking about what the future of that country is going to look like when you have two groups or several groups who want such vastly different things.
I'm on the BBC's website right now, and they're reporting that Germany is ruling out informal negotiations. So Angela Merkel is saying there can be no talks on Brexit before the UK formally begins the process of leaving the EU. I mean, Jillian, is that going to delay the actual divorce here, or do you think it will speed up, the move to let's begin this formally so we can see what this means?
I mean, that's a great question. And this is part of the reason that strong leadership in Great Britain would be fantastic right now.
Right.
So that somebody could definitively say, well, this is the path that we're on. This is what we want to do. But when you have a prime minister who just stepped down and you're unclear of who would actually be shepherding the country through this process, it's really hard to say, are we trying to move this along as quickly as possible so we can figure out what our economy and what our country looks like on our own? Or are they going to kind of dilly-dally around and see if maybe there are ways to maintain certain types of ties, or how exactly should we do this? I think it's, this is one of the problems that we run into.
Yeah. Was it inevitable, Patrick, that David Cameron would have to step down?
I felt that way. Even my wife is British, and we were watching this on the BBC the night that it happened, and both of us were deeply surprised that the vote went the way that it did go. And I remember chatting, it was around midnight, I remember chatting with my wife about how he would almost have to sit down. He was the one that called for the referendum, and he could not be the one to move this forward. So now it's going to be switching to someone like Boris Johnson. But I absolutely agree. We need very, very strong leadership in the UK right now. And everything is a big question mark. And I'm not sure that the Houses of Parliament even know how to proceed forward at this point.
It does look like a lot of confusion. Hey, you mentioned Boris Johnson, and I want to say that this report on the BBC at this hour, after a weekend of playing cricket and planning his Tory leadership bid, Boris Johnson emerged briefly for the cameras on Monday. He wanted to dispel, quote, confusion about the rights of European migrants living here already, but he has still to offer anything like a concrete plan about how he would negotiate the post-Brexit future. Jillian, what is Boris Johnson's future?
I mean, and here's another large question, right? I think this is a bit messy because there are a lot of people who I think perhaps voted assuming that certain promises were guaranteed, assuming that certain things were given, and now they're hearing that maybe the split won't be as clear, maybe the path forward isn't as straightforward as they once thought. Right. So then, you know, the question remains, are these people going to support him, or are they going to say, oh, no, this actually is not what we thought it was going to be. We need a different leader and we need new leadership.
Yeah, Patrick, I mean, we're already hearing the promises about, well, we're going to save all this money and it's going into the National Health Service. Now there's a lot of equivocation about that.
There certainly is, and that was one of the things that those people that were in favor of Brexit, they had been told that all of this money that is going to Brussels, which is which oversees the EU, we would be able to save that money, and it would go into the NHS, which is the National Health Service, which is, you know, a wonderful institution, but it has some bureaucratic problems as well. So I think people saw that as potentially a good idea, but the problem was that the amount of money is not that substantial, and in fact, the Brexit people that were leading the call to go, they didn't really have a very clear plan of what would happen. I think if you were to ask them privately if they would win, I think they would be deeply surprised as well.
Really?
I don't think they expected it to go this way either.
Now, Patrick Hicks is with us, writer-in-residence at Augustana University, and Gillian White with us from The Atlantic. And we're talking about what next for the Brexit. You hear we're raising a lot of questions. There's really a lot of concrete knowledge about what happens next and a lot of confusion about that. What do you all think is the position of the Obama administration? Because President Obama had a pretty good partner in David Cameron, didn't he, Gillian?
Yeah, I mean, I think they were both very open and clear about their support for one another. Obama, you know, was pretty clear that he thought it was a good idea for Great Britain to stay in the EU. So I think there's definitely a loss that happens there. And again, when we talk about uncertainty, we have uncertainty on both sides of that relationship now, right?
That's right.
We have an election coming up here, and it's unclear how our next leader will feel about whoever the leader in Great Britain ends up being. So a lot of uncertainty on both sides.
Patrick, I was on a more global level here. I was reading something that Max Fisher wrote in the New York Times over the weekend, and he wrote, what makes the United Kingdom so unusual is that it brought together four nationalities who see themselves as distinct yet have chosen to coexist. Multinational states are rare. Does this mean they become yet more rare, do you think?
Very possibly. We're seeing a fracturing of nationalism in general. I mean, one reason I think Germany is so quick to want to say, if you're leaving, you need to leave, is you just need to look at Spain and the province of Catalonia. Barcelona is the largest city. Catalonia wants independence. And there are, you know, a number of, so Spain could fracture if this is, if we sort of spool this out. So it's very interesting in Europe because people are understandably very proud of their national and ethnic backgrounds, and yet it's a very fluid place to live. So I have a friend in London who has seen, acts of verbal sort of violence against people from Poland because they happen to be speaking Polish.
Huh.
So this, whoever the leader is going to be, I just hope that they have a call for calm and one of integration rather than disintegration, even though it's instead of the United Kingdom, it looks like it's the disunited kingdom at this point.
It does. Patrick, thank you very much for being with us. Appreciate it.
My pleasure.
Gillian, one last question here quickly. I mean, Angela Merkel has been a very powerful figure through all of the financial crises that have hit Europe. Does she consolidate yet more power in this new kind of world order in Europe?
That's a great question. I think that's entirely possible. I think right now everyone's just concerned about what, as we talked about before, what these unions really look like. I think there's a lot of fear that this split will, you know, lead to other splits and things of that nature. So I think we still have to wait and see even with that.
Gillian, a pleasure. Thank you very much. I know you've got a busy day, so we appreciate the time.
Thanks so much.
Gillian White with us from The Atlantic, and Patrick Hicks, where he's a writer in residence at Augustana University.